Welcome to the business of open source. Every week, we explore different aspects of the relationship between money and open source software, talking with industry experts about monetizing open source projects, building a company around an open source or several open source projects, and the business value that open source provides. Thank you for joining me. Welcome. I am Emily O'Meara, your host, and today I'm chatting with Webb Brown, who is the CEO and co-founder of KubeCost. Webb, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me today, Emily. Really excited for the chat.
So let's start with just an introduction. What is KubeCost?
KubeCost provides cost monitoring and cost management solutions that are purpose-built for teams running Kubernetes or, you know, workloads on top of, you know, Kubernetes environments. We started the company in 2019 after we formed the KubeCost open source project. You know, we're a team of about 50 today that is fully remote. And yeah, super focused and excited about the problems we're helping now thousands of teams solve, which is around monitoring and, you know, effectively managing or reducing spend in Kubernetes environments.
So I actually wanted to ask what seems like a really basic question, but I think is actually more complicated, which is, what is Kubernetes cost? Like, Kubernetes doesn't send you a bill. So what is exactly Kubernetes cost?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think you kind of highlighted part of the challenge, which is that there's really no source of truth today when you start to think about the cost of, say, an application or a collection of application in Kubernetes. And it's because most things in Kubernetes are shared and or distributed and are oftentimes very dynamic. So when we talk about Kubernetes costs at KubeCost, we actually talk about two pieces. I think the first one is most relevant for what you touched on, which is the all-in costs of a Kubernetes cluster. And that would include everything that is, you know, observable in that cluster and is required for it to run. So things like, you know, load balancers and disk and, you know, VMs or machines or nodes themselves, but also things like, you know, network egress cost and, you know, cluster management fees, et cetera. So that's all kind of viewed as kind of core Kubernetes or in cluster costs. But inevitably, if you're a team at scale and you're using Kubernetes heavily, you're probably using external cloud costs as well. So KubeCost will give you visibility and insight into those external services like storage buckets and, you know, external databases. And while those aren't necessarily in Kubernetes land themselves, we just view them as very relevant for most teams that are running infrastructure in general at scale.
How does this pain sort of usually manifest itself? You know, let's say I'm a business and I get my cloud bill, for example, and it's like $1 million more than it was last month. And I'm like, oh, what changed? It could be Kubernetes, but is it necessarily Kubernetes?
Great question. And I think there was a really interesting CNCF FinOps survey here last year that kind of highlighted it. And it was approximately 70% of teams running Kubernetes or cloud native didn't feel like they had accurate visibility into their spend. And so what is most common is kind of what you said, which is costs are going up, or, and that could be, you know, on a growth rate or just costs are at an absolute level that are surprising. And then teams don't have the ability to kind of answer the question of why. What team, what project, what application, et cetera. That is oftentimes the first pain point that teams identify or feel as they scale with Kubernetes. And that's where, you know, either our open source project or commercial KubeCost would then be able to help them kind of look into what is commonly a black box. And then from there, it would be, okay, visibility and insights and or automation to actually help you optimize those resources. But step one is typically just getting that transparency in place where, again, most teams do not have it when they start working with us.
That makes total sense. It seems like sort of another layer on the frustration with cloud bills in general, but then there's also the complication of Kubernetes.
Right now, it's kind of the other side of really all the benefits that are realized by Kubernetes, which is you can have multi tendency and, you know, shared resources throughout your environment. But just like you said, there's this new abstraction on top of it that kind of reframes the problem in terms of like accurately measuring cost and fundamentally made it so that solutions that were kind of built for VMs where you're more inclined to have like a dedicated set of machines per teams or department or cost centers, that approach just kind of breaks down, right? When everything's shared and across different clusters.
So backing up a little bit and to understand a little bit more about your motivation, when did you decide to create KubeCost? And it sounds like, you know, the open source project came first. So what necessitated building the thing that became the KubeCost open source project?
I would say the genesis came well before we actually formed either the open source project or the company, but it directly relates to our time at Google. Both my co-founder, Jay Tripathi, and I were both there working on various infrastructure monitoring projects across like internal infrastructure, cloud, and dev tools. And we were thinking about different aspects of the same problem around, you know, cost and health and reliability and performance. And then we were in this really cool spot to see several of our teammates go and join the Kubernetes effort. Since day one, it like very much piqued our interest. It was, you know, very early in the like journey of Kubernetes, but we just started seeing more and more teams, you know, struggling with the problems that we were solving internally at Google and felt like there was a real need for more tooling here. And so, yeah, you know, over a couple years of learning and talking to users and just, again, kind of a growing fascination with these like really interesting problems that are now having to be solved when you're in these distributed and really dynamic environments.
It sounds like the open source project came first. And then after that is when you decided that this was something you were going to try to build a company around.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We launched the open source project in, you know, very early 2019. I think it was approximately 3 months later, formed the company. And the way we broke it down was we had pretty strong conviction that there was kind of a real, you know, pain point here. But still, we wanted to go hear from users that we could build the kind of kernel or the beginning of something that would help solve that. And we felt like that kind of happened overnight. We had about 100 teams using our product, I think within a month, if not less, of that initial launch. And that to us was just, you know, really strong validation that we think we can really help teams here. So that led to us forming a company, initially raising a little bit of money, bringing on our first amazing, you know, founding engineers. And yeah, it's been an amazing adventure since then.
Do you feel like there's any sort of hesitancy or almost like discomfort in talking about the financial side of, or the financial implications, I guess I should say, of your stack, basically? How comfortable are engineering teams thinking about and discussing this?
Internal versus external, there can sometimes be some sensitivity to sharing this, you know, broadly. It directly shaped how we architected or built the product, which is, you know, with KubeCost, like you don't have to ever share any data with us. It can be fully deployed in your environment and you can, you know, lock down all egress, for example. And that was fundamentally driven by, yeah, sometimes outside of the company, there can be sensitivity to sharing that with others. But I think within teams, within companies, we feel like even since we started the company, we're seeing this real shift in terms of engineering teams just being more aware and more, you know, transparent and, you know, wanting to have more cost data in the tooling that they're using, if you will. And it's interesting. I think there's a lot of things at play there. I think we're seeing kind of this like economic shift influence that some, but I think also just, yeah, cloud spend is so meaningful now and engineers can do so much to impact it. I think that you're seeing more and more, you know, engineering teams kind of embrace the like opportunity to optimize, you know, yet another really impactful metric.
Yeah, I think that there has been an increasing amount of discussion about engineering's relationship to business goals. And this is obviously part of it, right? You can have a very successful application. It could even, like, loads of people could even use it, but it could lose you money if it costs too much to run.
Totally. And, you know, as engineers, we've got a lot to think about. So our view has always been just trying to make it as easy as possible to just be aware of that. And, you know, oftentimes, like, you may be working on one microservice or one cluster, one application, and it may not be all of your infrastructure spend, but just being aware of the part that you're influencing. You know, we've seen situations where, yeah, spend can be reduced by 80% or more. Or also, you know, you have the ability to start to think about just the relationships of costs and other really important observability metrics like response times or availability. Because all of those things, when you're thinking about Kubernetes itself or the infrastructure layer, they're all deeply intertwined.
There's something also that I find interesting about having an open source cost tool. I don't know if I'm going to be able to articulate this fully, but you have a free tool that helps people reduce costs, which sort of makes sense. And then there's also a part of me that thinks, no, if you have like such a direct connection to cost cutting, it almost feels like you should just make everybody pay.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we thought a lot about, you know, before we created the open source company. And I think with us as both being engineers, we kind of thought really through the like initial experience of just getting access to a project and, you know, being able to see the code and being able to modify, et cetera. That's very, very interesting to us and always will be. And then there's also this personal belief of like, we find it incredibly empowering to like help many, many teams with, you know, budgets of all size. And, you know, I've worked with a lot of engineers that, you know, use our product on their like personal cluster. And we just always kind of thought that like, even having to pay a dollar may be a real friction if you just want to run this, you know, product on your personal environment. So yeah, I think it's, it will always be super important to us. And then also like, we just view in the Kubernetes or cloud native ecosystem, just interoperability as being increasingly important. When we look at projects like Prometheus and OpenTelemetry, et cetera, we felt being an open company would make it a lot easier for us to like integrate and do really interesting things across the ecosystem. So I'd say it's for those reasons why we're, you know, super excited and committed to invest even more in open source, a lot more as time goes on.
I love it. I actually also love that you're really clear about your motivations for why open source is important, you know, even with something that has like such a direct connection to like, it's so easy to show ROI.
Yeah, we try to make that very, very visible. Again, I think ROI is the very obvious piece of this, but sometimes it's actually even more focused on, and I would say increasingly more focused on like the reliability and performance piece. And I touched on a little bit earlier, which is like, anytime you're thinking about reducing costs, it's very common that you are thinking about a change that may potentially impact the performance of your application, whether that's be like, you know, changing the underlying infrastructure or configuring or implementing auto scaling. All of these things not only have a, you know, clear dollar impact, but they could have a clear application impact as well. So I think for that reason, like, always good to be really, really thoughtful.
I know that you just announced an initiative called Open Cost, and I was hoping you could talk a little bit about that and also what the difference is between Open Cost and Kube Cost.
Yeah, super excited to announce that. We just announced it just a little over a week ago. Just got some really exciting news about 1 hour ago. So, you know, very fresh, which is we just passed the CNCF vote to become a CNCF project. So our plan is to, you know, begin onboarding to CNCF as soon as possible. But if we look at the Open Cost project today, there's two pieces. The first is a brand new spec that was assembled by what, in my view, is like an amazing group of partners at Adobe and Armory, AWS, D2iQ, Google, SUSE, and others. And we all came together to really talk about a great way to define a spec or a standard for how you can accurately track costs across different Kubernetes environments. Because I know it's been our experience, and I think a lot of these partners felt the same way, is that there's still a lot of ambiguity in terms of how teams define cost allocation and cost monitoring. The goal with the spec is to really help solve that and make it so others can build solutions on top of that. And there can just be increasingly a common language in terms of how we talk about costs. Because like you said, there's really no source of truth today, given the Kubernetes abstraction. So that's part one, the spec. And then part two is the reference implementation for that spec. And that is where us as a KubeCost team has contributed all of our core allocation engine. So this is an implementation for AWS, Google, Azure, as well as on-prem Kubernetes environments. And so both of those will be expected to be onboarded to CNCF. And again, want to put a governance structure in place to where it's a community-driven effort. We continue to invest with others in a really big way and in years to come.
Cool. Sounds like at least the first part is sort of like the cloud native glossary, but just establishing that sort of common parameters, common language that can be easy to overlook, but really important, actually.
Yeah, I would say in my view, and it's just my perspective, but some combination of that glossary plus, maybe a spec like a OpenTelemetry or cloud events. And we as a working group spend a ton of time on just those core definitions. Yeah, naming can be hard, and it's somewhere that we're still very much open to ecosystem feedback. But I feel like it's been really helpful to see over the past, about 3 months, where that group has come together and really kind of worked through a lot of those foundational concepts and definitions, which, again, we think can really bring clarity to this really ambiguous problem today.
Why did you start the Open Cost project? What value does it bring to KubeCost?
We've touched on a little bit of it, but just the ability to work with others to reach more and more teams, more and more organizations. So just have a broader impact. We as a team have already gotten better from this just amazingly thoughtful input and contributions from others. We have, I don't know how the exact count today, but I think we're over 100 contributors to all KubeCost projects. Tons of just really valuable contributions there, and also the spec itself. I just feel like all around it's made us better as a company in many ways. We're super grateful for all the contributions that have been made, and again, that doesn't even count all the just hundreds and hundreds of pieces of feedback that we've got at this point, which I think is made much easier when you have an open solution and teams can go and look at code or file GitHub repos or issues on your public repo.
Why was it important to do this with a core group of founding partners versus just making this a KubeCost project?
It's critically important in our view, and this is really the transition from us taking our open source projects and kind of giving it to a neutral governance group. We just are strong believers that pulling ideas from across the ecosystem makes these products and output that much better. So I would say it's the beginning of that transition. The spec itself was the first project where we've done that. And again, I think it's so much stronger as a result. But now that we're planning to be going through CNCF onboarding process, we'll be doing a lot more of that, is my expectation. Yeah, I'm really excited for that.
Another question that I have, maybe slightly in the weeds, I apologize. You have a KubeCost project and KubeCost company, super clear to me, but it seems like it's not as common to come across companies that have the same name as their open source project. Very frequently, they're branded differently. The open source project is branded as X and the commercial project is branded as Y. I'm just curious, is this something that you thought about or did intentionally?
So first, I have to disclaimer and say, as engineers, I will be the first to admit that I don't necessarily believe that we're the best marketers in the world. And, you know, we were definitely focused on trying to, you know, really just keep things as simple as possible and try to cut down on confusion of like, was this Kubecost or something else? We actually do. So the Kubecost name is a project name. And it's like, also we have a DBA. Our actual underlying company is Stackwatch. We don't talk about Stackwatch a lot because we're so focused on, you know, Kubecost and that's like cost and performance, et cetera, is like 100% of our time. But yeah, I suspect as we get more and more great, you know, marketers on our team, we'll get better and better at like, you know, messaging that. I think it's interesting to, you know, highlight that we just brought on our first kind of go-to-market folks around middle of last year. Whereas like, you know, we were, I think all but one of us were engineers up until that point. So yeah, I think that's grounded in our, you know, focus on the technology itself and a little bit less experience in the marketing of it.
Well, I certainly didn't mean to imply that I think that this is a bad choice because, you know, I am a marketer and I'm actually kind of torn which approach I think is better because I think there's some advantages to both, but probably like if you were to put a gun to my head and say like pick one, I would probably go with the one that you took as the better.
So it's really interesting. I think I have learned a lot here. I definitely would always defer to experts like yourself. But I do think I've learned a lot since we launched the product. And yeah, I also see it similar to you, which is like there's trade-offs. But I did feel, you know, as a small team, managing multiple brands probably would have been, you know, more challenging. But again, I think there's pros and cons, it feels like, to either approach based on what I've seen from like, you know, friends and, you know, peers that are like founders of open core companies.
Aside from that, actually, which is, I think, one of the core challenges of a lot of open core companies, what do you see as like a challenge that you think is sort of unique to building an open source company that, you know, you don't see somebody with a closed source startup struggling with at all?
I think one that stands out, and you know, I could speak about a couple, you typically have either like different sources for visibility or less, you know, visibility into kind of how your product or software is being used. I would say that we regularly, you know, have teams reach out to us and just say like, hey, we're using Kubecost, you know, to do A, B, and C, or, you know, at this scale, and we've been using it for, you know, a year, and it's always amazing to hear, but it's pretty cool. And I think, you know, unique in that, like, we oftentimes would have no idea before they told us that. Whereas I think non-open source or, you know, closed source companies tend to be more SaaS with like, you know, telemetry baked into kind of, if not every part of their stack, a lot of it. Whereas again, we say you don't have to send us any data anytime you're running our product.
That's interesting. There's also a flip side to that, of course. Like, what do you see as some of the advantages?
Anybody in the world can come and install our product and, you know, never have to talk to us, and they can modify it and they can use it in really interesting ways, and they can build stuff on top of it and repackage it. Like, I view it as like we've also, again, kind of had just so many amazing contributions from the community, and we'll have community members present to us really impactful additions to our product that we didn't even think of. And so all of those things are amazing, and there's so much more. Again, I'm like, I am so, so grateful that we, you know, went this route, and again, very much expect to invest a lot more in just open source in general, but also the community.
If you were to give somebody advice on building something like Kubecost, and by something like, I mean, having a cross-company initiative that, you know, is going to bring together 6-8 different teams to build something, what advice would you have?
I think there's two things that stand out. The interesting thing about this was it largely just came together organically, or it was like just, you know, very obvious because the pain point was like both shared and felt real to like all of these different teams. So I think they're just, trying to like be really clear with the problem you're solving and, you know, making sure that there's just kind of general alignment that like, hey, this is, you know, the problem. A second part of that was someone in the working group nudged us or encouraged us to create a charter like very early on. I think it was just really helpful for us to then just put scope around kind of the initial launch. You know, there's so much that we can do here and still want to do here, but we realized we kind of couldn't do it all day one. So I think just like creating a definition of, you know, your mission, your scope, and maybe even your vision can really help kind of align or clarify intentions.
And just in general, like if you were to give advice to somebody who's thinking about or in the early stages of an open source startup, what would it be?
Yeah, at first, I'm definitely a product of my experience and have a sample size of one. But I think when I look back, we really focus kind of all of our energy and attention early on of just trying to solve what we thought was like a relevant and meaningful pain point. I think that there's a lot of, you know, can be a lot of moving parts and noises when you think about forming a company, et cetera. I think just like trying to set yourself up in the early days to spend as much time thinking about building something useful to others and just eliminating everything else in the very early days can allow you to just be like ruthlessly focused on that. Because I think once you're able to accomplish that, all of these other things become a lot easier. So I would say just trying to be, you know, ruthless about what those kind of like validation metrics or, you know, anecdotes are in the early days that you're truly solving something that is a real pain for teams. And, you know, there, I think we learned so much. We talked to over 100 different users and prospects in the early days of building our open source project. And those conversations were just so informative. So I would say like any time you can have kind of direct interaction with users or prospective users, those conversations can be worth so much.
Excellent. Anything else that you'd like to add?
No, I think we've hit on a lot of great stuff here. So yeah, just can't thank you enough for having me and really enjoyed the discussion.
Likewise. Well, how can listeners connect with you or learn more?
So you can just check out kubecost.com or you can reach out to me directly at webbb@kubecost.com if you want to connect directly.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much. This was a great conversation.
Thank you, Emily. Really enjoyed it on my end.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Business of Open Source. If you'd like to learn more about positioning, messaging, and go-to-market for open source and cloud-native startups, head over to my blog, positioningopensource.com. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. I'm at Emily Omier, and you can feel free to reach out on Twitter or on my website and blog with questions or comments. If you enjoyed this episode, also please share and help more people discover this podcast. Thank you, and we hope to have you next week.